Hey friends, I'm your San Francisco referral partner, Sean Kunkler. On today's episode, I sit down with Trevor Wissink Adams, who is the lead of the TWA team out of Boston. Today, we talk about leveraging opportunity to grow during a changing market. We also talk about how he cut his teeth in the business 6 years ago and now grew himself a three-person team producing $50 million in sales annually. We also discuss the areas that he shows up a little extra for his clients. Let's dive in. Trevor, thanks for joining me today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
In a quick few sentences, who are you and what do you do?
I'm Trevor Wissink Adams. I have a crazy hyphenated last name that no one can pronounce or spell. I'm a real estate agent in the greater Boston area. I grew up in the area and lead a small team of two other agents and myself. And we work with wonderful clients, you know, within 30 to 40 minutes of the city and inside the city, helping them buy and sell homes.
Nice. I love that. I'm an East Coaster, born and raised. So
Connecticut, right?
Connecticut. Yeah. Good memory. So it's great for me to always connect with people because obviously living in San Francisco, I'm on the other side of the world. And when friends and family need help over there, it's always great to have these additional connections.
Absolutely.
So let's kind of rewind a little bit. I know you've been in the business in the grand scheme of things for a shorter period and this wasn't your first career. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I started my career in 2008. I was actually a seventh grade English teacher in Oakland Unified School District. So I know you know the Bay Area well. I was teaching English in East Oakland for a few years and then actually came back to the greater Boston area for grad school and then had some other jobs after that in sort of the K-12 education world as an operations director at a school, and then actually doing some external affairs and sort of fundraising work for a group of schools that serves older students up to 22 years old in the high school space. So yeah, I had a career in K-12 education starting with seventh grade English in the Bay Area. So definitely got a taste of what the Bay Area life is like and, you know, miss it often in January and February and March here in Boston.
Yeah, our worst weather out here is rain. And it's usually not that cold. It's just rain.
Yeah, totally. So that was my career. And I got licensed in real estate sort of midway through that career. I got my real estate license in 2014.
Okay.
I didn't fall into it, but I saw a friend who was doing this work in sort of part-time summers, evenings, nights, weekends. And he sort of brought me into a rental brokerage in Boston. And that's kind of where I started part-time and kind of did that for quite some time to ramp up the business.
Just helping people find rentals, you mean?
Yeah, find rentals. And then I kind of took a break. And then I kind of thought, okay, if I really want to focus on this and take this seriously, I need a mentor. And I actually ended up working with the agent that helped my wife and I buy a condo. I sort of said to her, hey, I'll probably refer a lot of people into you in the next couple of years and would love to just work with you on some of those projects, helping people, mostly first-time home buyers, buy homes. And so she took me on and I was over at Sotheby's here in Boston. And it was great. We had a great relationship and still do. And she's wonderful. And I have so much respect for her and her business. So that was kind of how I started out in sales in 2017, but still doing it part-time with her.
That's a brilliant way to do it. It's interesting with this industry. It's unfortunately the bar of entry is pretty low. You just have to pass a test. But then after that, you can actually go and practice real estate. And so I really appreciate essentially becoming an apprentice and learning from a master of their craft how to do these things, which sounds like you already had kind of the core tenets before you jumped in.
One of the things that I love about this industry is that the learning is sort of endless. And I knew that there was just too much to really take on and sort of thoughtfully and honestly represent clients without some level of guidance along the way. So, you know, when there were thorny questions during a deal or, you know, things that come up on inspection, how to think about them, how to help clients think about them. She was a really just a great resource. So we had a great run together sort of for about, I would say, 4 years. And we had a lot of fun and helping people, you know, buy and sell homes in Boston.
With your past career of being an educator, that's essentially what we do from our marketing to working with clients, buyers or sellers, and guiding them through, educating them through this entire path. So I can absolutely see where one feeds the other.
Definitely. I got into education because I was passionate about K-12 education, working with young people, you know, helping them navigate, you know, particularly like middle school to high school kids, like coming up, thinking about what do you want to do with your life? You know, how can I help you think about that? How can I expose you to different things? How can you seek out different opportunities? So, you know, there's definitely some of that inside of real estate and helping educate people on, you know, what does it look like to gut a kitchen or redo your roof? How much does it cost? How long is it going to take? You know, there are just so many questions that come up for people as they think about buying their first home or their fourth home. So it's a lot of fun to help folks answer those questions and guide them well.
What was the biggest challenge you had during that transition?
I think part of it was my identity for, you know, 12 so years was really sort of as an educator or like working with educators. And I really loved everyone that I worked with. So that transition, I think, was a bit difficult. Most of it happened during the pandemic too, which was like, you know, for a lot of people kind of you're in your own silo. So I was often sort of disconnected from, you know, my colleagues at that time. So it made it, I guess, somewhat easier in some ways because, you know, you're kind of on your own. But that was probably the most difficult part of the transition. And then obviously making the jump from a salaried role where you have some level of security and healthcare and to real estate where, you know, you might get paid 1 month and then you might not get paid for a couple months, depending on, you know, sort of the market and how you're doing and how you've sort of built your business. So I think it was helpful for me to ramp up the business. I would not have been able to sort of quit cold turkey and go into it in 2017. I would have struggled and probably not been able to pay my bills, to be quite honest.
I know for me, it took a good 6 months to really start settling in, but it took me, I don't remember how long it took. 3-ish months before my first transaction. But thank God that first deal was over $2.6 million, which gave me a really good base to live off of. And if I hadn't had that, it would have been a completely different landscape. And unlike you, I had nothing to fall back on. I wasn't in a relationship, so I didn't have a second income. And I had quit my job. So I was like, I burned my ship and I was like, the only way is forward. And so it's going to work hell or high water. And thankfully I got past that hurdle and had some really good sales after that point and then was able to just keep building.
And remind me, your career prior to coming into real estate was it in hospitality?
The very last position I held prior to getting into it was I was working at luxury health clubs, gyms, and I was in membership roles, so sales roles. And for one of the clubs I was at, they would have some of the initiation fees were in the thousands of dollars, and then the monthly dues were in the high hundreds to thousands of dollars per month. So we were catering to a very high net worth clientele base. And then prior to that, I was running martial arts schools. And so it's always been, I always called it, it's relationship sales. where you are going to see these people over and over, month over month. But I've been in sales roles, sales seats. And so that was my savings grace coming into this.
You know, one of the hangups for me coming into real estate was kind of thinking about myself as like, quote unquote, a salesperson, which I really had no idea what that meant and definitely had sort of negative connotations in my own mind. And I really don't consider, myself sort of a salesperson. I really focus on just driving value for people and providing insight whenever I can and whenever folks reach out to me. One of the things that I did when I first started out, I was like, you know, how am I going to sort of shift into this career? Was I mailed home evaluation reports to pretty much everyone in my network. And these, you know, weren't necessarily people who had transacted with me, but had maybe been in their home for a long time or, you know, I bought it a couple of years ago and just sort of said like, hey, you know, I know that you, you know, love your home and I'm just reaching out with some comps in your neighborhood to show you sort of what your home might sell for on the market today. And I think like that combined with like a monthly newsletter really kind of helped shift even just my thinking, but also I think the people in my world's thinking about me as sort of K-12
educator. I had this similar challenge of reframing people of I've evolved to this new person, this new entity with a new set of skills and education. And so there was a slow period of getting the people who previously knew me up to speed in my new career, in my new life. One of the things we do, we absolutely do the neighborhood reports. And the two subtle differences we do is one, we look up when they purchased, basically what month. And then what we do is on the anniversary, we send them the neighborhood report. And so, and then there's a handwritten card. And usually the first couple will say, you know, much like watching the stock market, you may not want to buy or sell right now, but it's good to have this information to kind of know what's happening. And we just send it that way. So this way they're not feeling like we are trying to position for a sale per se. We're just educating and kind of stepping back and like, when you're ready to make a move, give us a call. But that's not what we're delivering right now.
Totally. And I think that's great. And I think people appreciate it, right? They're like, yeah, someone who's sort of in touch with my market and knows what's happening and care about my knowledge about my own home and so on. So I think that's great. How many of the people that you sort of were in your world in the space that you were in before, whether it was the martial arts or the sort of like gym space, how many of those people, you know, have you worked with in your real estate career?
Not many, surprisingly. It depends on how you define worked with. So I've worked with probably a dozen, and I've actually sat with at the closing table maybe four.
Okay. Yeah.
So the numbers aren't staggeringly high. The bulk of my business has been either through acquiring other agents' business who are leaving the market, referrals, or people that we've met, that I've met along the way from doing seminars, hosting open houses. I door knocked very, very early on in my career. So it's kind of been from all these different angles. And then on my team, Priyanka, the bulk of her leads are either open houses or networking events, which that's the one thing she leans into really hard. She loves them. She loves going to them, loves doing them. And so that's where she goes incredibly hard on the paint with all things events.
Huh. And networking events, like, is she hosting them herself or just attending them?
Both. So there's a bigger one that she actually just put together with her children's school. And so she's bringing a group of parents together, and it's not to leverage real estate per se. It's basically a bunch of individual entrepreneurs who are kind of talking about their business challenges, which obviously she's going to be able to talk about her business and where she works and where she focuses, which matches where these people actually want to live or currently own. And so it's a combination of both.
Yeah, that's fun. That's fun. I'm sure, you know, there's so much relatability across sort of running your own business inside the real estate world versus, you know, any sort of tech entrepreneurship, sales entrepreneurship, whatever, selling a widget, right? There's overlap in terms of the challenges for any sort of founder or operator.
I mean, there's only a few ways to make money for a business. It's the same formula regardless of the business. There's the scaling problems all businesses have. Like there are a lot of pieces that will 100% cross over, whether it's from a tech business, from selling actual hardware or software, or even a law firm. There's absolutely ways and areas that they cross over that we can benefit from just having conversations with people.
Definitely. And then, so when you say you acquire other folks' business, like people who are leaving the Bay Area and you sort of know them, I'm curious to hear what that looks like.
Yeah. So what's interesting is, I would say this is true for most all cities, is cities tend to be transient and people tend to come in for either college or business and then they stay for a stint and then they go back home. And so San Francisco tends to be very mass transient. And when there's turns in markets and turns in cycles and people who like real estate, but they didn't fall in love with it as being a practitioner, they kind of trend out. And most people, unfortunately, they don't have a CRM. They didn't build the business. And so they leave and it dies. And just being friends and connecting with people, and I had a couple opportunities where somebody was transitioning back into a different industry and they had leads. I'm actually working with, I think we have 4 buyers right now from somebody who had left the business, and we marketed to them, introduced ourselves, built some value, and now we have active buyers because of it. And so that was one part of it. It's really hard in San Francisco to be in multiple markets. So we have Marin, which is in the North Bay. There's Oakland, Alameda, as you know, which is in the East Bay. Berkeley's over there. And then you have the South Bay, which South Bay is where Tesla, Google, Facebook, Apple, all the big tech companies are. And so in San Francisco, we have our own contracts. We have our own compliancy. There's our own set of challenges. But to get from Marin to the South Bay, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday, it's going to take you 2.5 hours one way. And so you can, if you wanted to, I guess, work in all those markets, but you have to be really strategic, either build a team or build a referral network. And so my long-winded answer is I've created relationships with agents in those markets. So I refer them business and they refer me business. And we have kind of an overlapping understanding that anybody shopping in this area, I'll take care of, and vice versa. And so those are different. It's not necessarily I've acquired their business per se, but we have created a symbiotic relationship where we feed each other.
Nice.
Do you have anything similar with where you're at?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, I know you take like the 880 in San Francisco, right? Or something like that, that'll take you across sort of from Marin to down to the South Bay, or something in the 800s, right? What is it?
I think it's 580, the 101, Route 1. It's a mess.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's different. I mean, Boston's just much smaller scale wise, you know, greater Boston. As long as you're not trying to travel different places at 9 a.m., 5 p.m., or even starting at like 3 p.m., you can get from Boston to Metro West in 30 to 40 minutes, depending, right? So there are a lot of agents who span that geography frequently, but most markets have sort of a dominant player, particularly in the suburban markets. And so we'll refer business, you know, back and forth a little bit, but it's not so prohibitive in the way that the Bay Area is in terms of just getting around. That said, 93 South or 93 North, you know, bad times, like a parking lot just sort of goes from the, you know, through the city. So it really depends, but that's great. That's a cool way to run your business, and so many ways to run your business. So that's fun. It's always fun to learn.
That's what I love about this business is there's there's an infinite of ways to approach it and to do it. And even this, having these amazing conversations with phenomenal agents literally across the US and leveraging referrals that way, because people do move around and we do need to have this large network to connect with. Where with your team, I know you have, including yourself, you have three basically salespeople or agents. Where are the bulk of your leads coming from at this point?
Yeah, the bulk of them are through referral and sphere-based business.
That's great.
Which is great. And then, you know, we have a handful of developers that we work with as well. So folks that are, you know, building homes. And in Boston, that's extremely difficult to do, just given, you know, the zoning code here, some of the restrictions around inclusionary development. So that's hard. That's some of our business as well. And then we do some online lead generation through like promoting different profiles online. So those are, I would say, the biggest sort of three lead generation sort of pillars that we have in the business. Mm-hmm. It's been great. I think we prefer to have sort of all sphere-based referral business, just because we have some amazing past clients and friends and family members, and working with their friends and colleagues is just always awesome. So we're super grateful for that part of the business. And, you know, the developers that we work with are awesome and build just, you know, beautiful, beautiful homes for people inside of Boston. So it's a lot of fun.
I agree. I think the biggest area, in my opinion, where most agents leave money on the table is the sphere-based business. I can't say that. It's a riddle. Because there is actually a stat from the National Association of Realtors that say, and I've quoted this before on different past episodes, but 80% of buyers say that they'll use the same agent to sell their home. However, only 30% actually do. And so in terms of sphere, the relationship follow-up, most agents clearly drop the ball after that point, because they're not then getting any referrals from those people, and they're definitely not staying in relationship when those people are then thinking about making another move, buying another house, selling, whatever their next strategic move is. It kills me. I mean, it's great for my business, but it kills me that there's so much money being left on the table in that one category.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we'll see in the next, you know, this year and maybe next year, there will be a lot of agents who probably leave the business just based on really low transaction volume. So I'm sure there will be, you know, a lot of folks who own homes in the next 3 to 5 years whose agent might not exist anymore and need somebody new to help them. So it's an interesting industry in that way.
I agree. I think the attrition rate between this year and next is going to be staggering, with how many people just didn't have the right foundational pieces in place, or they just didn't have them ready in time and they just couldn't survive. Like, if I was a year or two into the business, there's no way I would have the financial stability to have been able to survive a few of the major hiccups that we saw from either the early days of the pandemic or the recent interest hike.
Yeah, it got very quiet around here kind of November, December, January, February. So, I mean, transactions were just really low. And around here, I don't know what it's like in San Francisco, but there's very, very limited building inside of the city right now. So you don't have that level of inventory there. And then anyone who's in the suburbs, you know, people are living longer, and sort of the baby boomer generation, they're staying in their homes longer, particularly in the suburbs of Boston. And many of them have either no mortgage or, you know, a mortgage at 2.75% over the next 30 years. So there's not much incentive for them to put their home on the market. But it's still a great time to sell here. There's really nothing to buy for the most part.
What we're finding with the increase of the mortgage rate is most people are not moving unless they have to. There's an actual trigger event that's significant. They're relocating to another city, which that's a something's forcing their hand, or if there's a death in the family, or it's a trust sale in some capacity. And so the people who are just moving to upsize or downsize, it doesn't pencil out for them right now. And that's what, similar to you, we're seeing a big dip in inventory, but we're also on the inverse seeing that buyers have become incredibly choosy. They are now obviously committing to a significantly higher rate than they saw in recent months. And so now they're, well, if I'm paying that rate, I want X, Y, and Z. And most of the time, X, Y, and Z doesn't exist. So it's a lot more coaching we're seeing on our end.
Yeah. And Boston's an interesting market in that we have a lot of demand on the rental side from in-person industries like higher ed, the hospitals. Both of those in particular have huge demand on just in-person work, right? Which is a lot different, I think, than San Francisco, where you have a lot more remote work happening, I would say, than in Boston, which, you know, I think some of the differentiating factors in the major metro markets in this country are always interesting and driving demand and driving price.
For your team, where are you seeing the opportunity?
I think over the next couple of years, the opportunity is good for us at this stage are going to be people who are upsizing. So taking their condo that they purchased in the past, so sort of 5 years, and looking to buy in the suburbs of Boston, get more space and buy a single family. I think that's going to be a huge piece of our business in addition to the new development over the next couple of years. And then I think, you know, just like we were talking about at the top of this, adding value wherever you can throughout someone's home buying or home selling process and adding it early to sort of demonstrate your expertise and knowledge and skill around buying and selling homes. And like, what are the ways that you tangibly do that year in and year out and building systems around that? I think that that's the most important thing that any real estate agent really can do in their business is how do you offer value, do it consistently and systematize it so that, you know, your clientele or the people that you work with know what to expect and how you think about the work. Those are the, you know, that's maybe not an area of opportunity, but I think an area for us as a team to constantly improve on our process.
And I would agree with you. I think there's seasons within the industry, and then within those seasons, there's seasons for our businesses. And there's seasons when you're just running at full speed to stay caught up. And then there's other times when you have the time to actually work. You can work on the business and you can work in the business. And it gives us the opportunity on the back end. Like right now, that's with a little bit more time that we do have, we are cleaning up a lot of our systems also and making sure that we're all these things are documented. If they're not documented, get them on paper, going back and double check and make sure things are updated. Because I'm of the same philosophy. Without those systems, one, you can't duplicate the experience for the client. And then two, you can't scale it. And so you're kind of stuck. And so in my opinion, it's an amazing time to get that down. Because once the market ticks back up and you have the revenue to hire and to bring on more talent, you can continue to scale at a much quicker pace because you have... It's like building a house. You built a really amazing foundation and you took the time to make sure it's 100% correct. And now you can just go up and go as big as you want at that point.
What are some of the systems that you're building? Like, it sounds like maybe you're cleaning up your CRM, but what are some of the things that you and your team are focused on from a system building perspective that you think are going to be really valuable in the next couple of years?
So the big thing that we did was in more recent timeline is I brought in a marketing person who is not only helping with the podcast, which is obviously helping with more exposure on a national level, but we're creating We've been creating or taking the ideas that we've had for marketing and actually building them into pieces that we can either send out, have at open houses, but then in creating them in a way that there's brand consistency across. So we're redoing one of our, it's a bifold team brochure. I have a book that's out. It's the Insider's Guide to Home Buying, redoing that and updating the cover to match the brand and branding and updating the website, creating ways to have clients come back and look at our newsletters and look at the market reports. And so it's a lot of pieces of just the proof of success cards that we mail out quarterly, designing those out for 2024. And when are they going out? What do those look like? What does revamping the newsletter and how is that doing? We've done a bunch of A/B testing on the newsletter and seeing what people are actually liking and interacting with. We have a newsletter that goes out for Realtor 180. We've done a bunch of A/B testing on that. And so because we have a little bit more time, it's been a lot of that side of the cleanup. And then Kat, my operations superstar, she has been cleaning up and working on some of the agent recruiting components, creating, we actually just finalized the brochure, and then all the systems. So creating a communal drive and filing everything correctly. So if an agent comes in and is like, hey, I need a script for an open house, they can, with after a couple of clicks, pull up the script and have tools, pieces, components for them to work with. So it's been a lot of driving that side of the business, of course, mixed with lead gen and focusing on driving revenue.
For you, are you hoping to sort of become a team leader who's sort of leading the team and not focused as much sort of on production? Or are you sort of like, well, what is your future goal around the team structure?
That's a great question. I don't think no one ever asked me that. So again, my background is I come from luxury. And so I'm very hardwired to not sell on volume. So I don't want to become a puppy mill of we're just eroding the client experience or rushing them through a process or rushing them into something that's 100% against our philosophy. And so it's the high value, high touch experience. And so the infrastructure that I'm currently building is I'd like to build out more team members in San Francisco specifically and keep working on the system and making sure that all the components are working together correctly. My biggest fear is when I hand a client off to somebody that they're not going to be treated the way that I would treat them. And so creating a training and systems where they will get treated the same. And there is an organization on the back end to ensure that's happening. And then once we get there, as I mentioned, we basically have the different boroughs around San Francisco is then start building satellite teams in those markets. So then as we refer somebody to another market, they're going to, again, receive the same experience that they've had working with us in the city. And so that's the trajectory, and that's the direction I've been pushing it.
That handoff is like a whole nother call. We should talk about sort of how you think about the systematization of that sort of handoff, because it is so personal. If you're sort of referring, you know, or taking a client of yours and you know, handing them to someone on your team, I think it's just really difficult. So I'd be interested at some point to discuss that with you further. But it's just, that's hard.
100%. And the high level is I try to figure out, well, I kind of rate who that client is. And then based on that, it's how involved am I going to be in that next component? If they're let's say they're moving from San Francisco to Marin County and they've worked with me 7 times in the past, I'm not going to just hand them off and walk away. And basically, I'm on all emails. I'm a part of that entire experience. But if I just met them at an open house and we've had a 15-minute conversation, I'm more than comfortable handing that person off. Of course, to a trust, somebody that I highly value and trust as a realtor. And I know that they're going to treat them with the highest level of respect. So it, for me, at least, it always starts with who's the individual. And what do they mean to my business? And what do they mean to me in terms of actual relationship is how I kind of try to digest it down. And there's basically, I have 3 categories of how involved am I going to be? And then I love systems and I love checklists. It keeps my ADD organized. And so then within that, there's thresholds of where I'm going to be involved and what I'm going to be doing.
I'm always amazed by sort of mega teams or mega brokerages that have, you know, all these agents and how you think about like cultivating a consistent experience, right? You know, you and I are sort of running smaller teams, but there are these teams that are out there that are, you know, 25, 75, over 100 agents. And I'm just, I don't know, it just always amazes me how you keep people happy inside of the team, keep clients happy, and manage what can be a pretty difficult process depending on the transaction. So that's cool that you have some sort of like a ranking system or a way that you think about it.
With you being in Boston, or if somebody was in New York or LA, it would be, there's parallels, right? Because they're cities. But if you're in a more suburban, larger sprawl area, I'm sure you would structure it very differently, and you can structure it differently. And then I think within that, it depends on, in San Francisco or California, we don't use attorneys at all, unless there's a major problem. So the agent is doing all the contracts all the way through, which then makes the liability go through the roof. And so as a team lead, I don't want to revert to a volume sale because my risk and liability is through the roof. And so that's where it goes back to the more hand curated experience.
That's a major difference from the Massachusetts market. We, you know, use attorneys. So that's a big difference.
Yeah. Which is, I feel like, I don't know, I've never done a transaction, but having an attorney step in, it takes a layer of pressure off of the individual agents. I mean, I'm not saying they can't make mistakes and things of that nature, but I feel like a layer gets pulled away.
Yes, and to have another voice and sort of brain thinking about a transaction and reviewing condo docs or, you know, plot plans or whatever it might be is helpful for sure. You know, someone who's seeing a variety of transactions that aren't yours, right, is also great. They're leveraging that experience across, you know, many different sales. So, helpful.
The time flew by, as I promised. We're at 57 minutes. I feel like we just scratched the surface on so many good topics. When you have time in the future, I'd love to have you back on. Keep unpacking the team structures. I find all of that fascinating because we're at a similar size of team and obviously are facing parallel challenges.
Definitely. Well, I think you'd probably agree, but everything in this business is about the people that you work with. And, you know, I feel grateful to work with the people that I do and the people in our sort of greater Boston real estate community. There are a lot of really amazing agents who are just professional and kind and hardworking. So, I would love to chat with you again about a number of these topics. So I'm happy to come back and, you know, admire the podcast and all the people who've been on before me, because I think you've given a lot of value out to folks and as they're thinking about their business.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I appreciate your time.
Totally. All right, Sean. Thank you.